From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. Imagine a minor character in the classic novel Moby Dick getting her own voice and her own story, and how one decision impacted generations. Author Tara Carr Roberts does just that in her debut novel, Wild and Distant Seas, and we're lucky enough to have her joining us today to talk more about this. Tara, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Okay, so start out by telling us, where did you get the idea for this book?
Yeah, so I had never read Moby Dick, even though I was a book geek. I have an English degree, but when I was kind of in my early 30s, I decided to finish my master's degree while I was working at the University of Idaho, and just taking one class at a time. And in the very last class I took, we had to read Moby Dick. And I was honestly kind of scared of it. I was just like, oh my gosh, like seriously, at this point, I finally have to read this thing. But very quickly discovered that it was not what I expected, that it is stranger and more frustrating and more wonderful than I imagined. But what I attached to really quickly was this character of this innkeeper on Nantucket who, you know, it says that she was entirely competent to attend to all of her husband's affairs while he was gone. And I started wondering, you know, what if she had a story? What if all of these things that were being told in Moby Dick are not, in fact, what actually happened, especially considering that she is the only woman with any sort of significant speaking role in that entire giant novel. So the novel actually started as a short story that I wrote for that class in 2018, and then just kind of snowballed from there.
Okay, so for folks who haven't picked up a copy of the book yet, give us the plot of the book, because it does start, as you said, with this minor character in Moby Dick.
Yeah, so it starts with this minor character. Everyone in the book has some kind of mild magical powers, and she has been using some psychic abilities to keep everyone on Nantucket happy, even though she knows that her husband is dead and never coming back. She's been kind of using these powers to keep everyone off her back. And when Ishmael from Moby Dick, the narrator of most of Moby Dick, shows up, everything starts to fall apart. And she ends up having a relationship with him and having a child, and he still leaves to go hunt the great white whale. And it then follows her family through the next three generations and everything that happens to them. They end up all over the world. There's, there's shipwrecks, there's drama, but there's also a lot of, stories that are focused on the interactions between parents and children and, women trying to find their place and their opportunities in a world that doesn't always want them to have those.
Was that important to you to really give voice to, you know, these really strong female characters? Because the book starts with Evangeline. But I mean, as you said, it's generational. I mean, there's, then you have her daughter and then her daughter's daughter. And they're all these very unique, but very strong characters.
No, that was really, really important to me. In some part as a contrast to Moby Dick, which I do like, but is, people talk about it as this novel that's a microcosm of America, but it's almost entirely missing women. And that's not just a product of its time. That's still a thing we tend to do in storytelling is leave out the domestic and leave out the behind the scenes and leave out women's lives in so many ways. And so it was important to me to write these characters who, have big personalities and then literally have magic powers, but are also facing conventions and social structures that challenge those parts of themselves and that challenge how they see themselves. And that, I feel like there's a really wonderful legacy of stories that are in the same kind of vein of retelling things from a woman's perspective. Most famously, recently, the book Circe by Madeline Miller is an example of that, and a book that I absolutely love where it tells a part of the Odyssey from this woman's perspective. I wanted to join that tradition, but I also just love telling stories about women and the generational aspect of it was interesting and important to me. I grew up across the field from one of my grandmothers and knew my great grandma and great great grandma when I was growing up, and got to hear their stories and then also see how those stories are told in different ways at different points in everyone's lives. And I wanted to experiment with that a little bit too.
Well, and I thought what was interesting as well is, you know, the, so as I said, we start with Evangeline and then her daughter, Rachel. And where did you come up with this idea that really they were in a way on a hunt for Ishmael? I mean, and I'll admit, I never read Moby Dick. I read the Cliff Notes in high school, but I did not read the book. But when you, to me, it was kind of like, oh, you know, in Moby Dick, these men are chasing this great white whale, right? In your book, it's like they're chasing Ishmael to try to figure out like who they are almost.
Yeah. And I think an important part of the comparison there for me is, you know, I do want to emphasize, you don't have to have read Moby Dick to read this, but you know,
you don't.
Most of us know that story of the ill-fated quest for the whale. And I would say that, you know, it's in Moby Dick, Ahab's quest and Ishmael's quest and everyone's is to some extent misguided. They're looking for maybe the right things, but they're looking for them in the wrong places. And I think that's an important part of my novel as well, where, you know, they do, most of the characters spend their lives looking for Ishmael, but I want readers to see that perhaps that's not what they should be looking for, and see how it takes them in some, you know, unexpected and perhaps educational, but not ideal directions, that they could be looking other places for those things that they need.
So, Tara, this other thing I want to talk about, though, is when with Rachel's kind of obsession, right, of trying to find her father, because she really has this really lovely life that you create for her, right, in Boston with her husband. She has a daughter, and then all of a sudden she finds these letters and wants to chase her father to try to find him, and goes across the world, and she takes her daughter with her. But then there is, I don't want to give too much away, but her daughter, she ends up being separated from her daughter. And I just found that to be so incredibly tragic, in this idea of you will almost do anything to try to find this elusive, you know, man, whale, whatever. I mean, was that in the back of your head as you were writing this?
Yeah, absolutely. With Rachel's story, it's been interesting hearing from readers, because I hear from people who really like her and people who really deeply dislike her. But I was interested in her character in kind of exploring two ideas. One, you know, that it is a very human tendency to get stuck on a story, or to create a story, even where to try to make sense of things, and that she gets very stuck on the story that her life won't make sense until she meets her father. And then ends up constructing other things around that to hold that idea up, even when she is then completely ignoring these other good things that she has, or sacrificing these other good things she has. And I'm also interested in kind of the tension between love and freedom, that the more people you love, the more things you're tied to, and that she, you know, she ultimately does take her daughter with her because she can't bear to leave her. But at the same time, really struggles with this thing that she wants to do, and these adventures that she wants to have, and these other things, and the way that the fact that she has had this child and she has gotten married complicates her ability to do that. And I think that all the characters in the book to some extent deal with that, like wanting love, wanting relationships, wanting to have people that matter to them, but then also recognizing the way that then limits what they're able to do as individuals. And I don't think either of those things are a bad thing. I think it's just the thing that a lot of people deal with.
Well, and I think it's interesting what you said about, you know, you've heard from readers, right? They either love or hate Rachel. And I have to say, I feel like I can see both sides of her struggle, right? And and the decisions that she made. But with that said, I mean, I was still like shocked by the decision that she made. But I think you're right. It goes back to that idea of being tied down with the more people that you love. I think we all go through that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad that you see both sides of her. I really enjoyed, she was a challenge to write and took me a long time to, I feel like, kind of get that character to the point that she is in the final novel. And so I appreciate when people say that they're a little traumatized by her storyline, because I want
I was
to
a
be.
Little bit. Okay. I was. You did a good job. Who was the easiest character to write for you?
Oh, for me, she was the last character I wrote by a long shot. I had actually written originally the novel has four narrators. Originally it had five. I ended up deleting the last two and writing a new one, well into writing this novel, and that was Annie, Antonia, the final character. And she was easiest to write just in the sense that she sounds the most like me. So she is from, she doesn't move to Idaho till she's 13, but she ends up being from Idaho. I am from Idaho. Her, just, little things like her diction, the way she talks, the way she constructs sentences is much, much more how I talk than any of the other characters are. Even like reading parts of the book aloud, I do not like reading anybody out loud other than Annie. Because they all just sound wrong in my voice. And then, even though it was a challenge to write Moscow, Idaho, where I've lived for the last 20 years and where I spent some time as a child, from a very different perspective than my own, it was also just ridiculously fun. And everything in the book was really fun to do, but writing Annie's portion and getting to see this town that I love through her eyes was really fun.
Well, and at full transparency to our listeners, Terry, you and I have known each other for a while. We actually worked together at the University of Idaho. And I have to say, I always felt like you really took me under your wing. I felt kind of, lost in a lot of ways, and you were always just so delightful. And I we're basically we're a science writer when I met you. And I had no idea that that this was something that you had wanted to do. So with that said, I mean, did you always have in the back of your mind, like, I want to write a novel, or I think I can write a novel?
Oh, absolutely. I would say like my entire life, like as soon as I knew what a book was, I wanted to write a book. And at the point where we worked together, I also have always known that most novelists have to have day jobs, and I have been very lucky to have wonderful, wonderful day jobs, mostly at the University of Idaho, mostly as a science writer. That's still what I do now. I work for other universities, but I'm mostly a science writer. And all of those experiences, even in the years where like I wasn't actively working on a novel, and I certainly wasn't telling people that I was trying to write a novel because that seemed like way too much commitment. It's always been in the back of my head that this is like honestly the like getting seeing this book that I wrote out in the world is, I mean, other than my children, the best thing I've ever done, I would say. The thing that's most important to me.
Well, and I have to say, I mean, folks should know that. I mean, you were writing this novel. I mean, you also had a full-time job, and as you said, you have
Yes.
two kids. Where our kids are similar in age, and
Yes.
as I'm, and all of a sudden this book comes out, and I'm like, look, I can barely keep my head above water most days, and she's now just written a novel. But I mean, kudos to you. And what has it been like to be able to be on this journey? Because the book's been really well received as well.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so it I will say it was not easy to write a book while doing all the things I've done. I have an incredibly supportive husband and incredibly supportive children, and that helps. That goes a long way. Then, my kids were in kindergarten and third grade when I started writing this, and they are in sixth and ninth now. So they have grown up with the book, and they have known since they were tiny that like mom is writing, you leave her alone. And it took, also a lot of years of writing in the dead of night and writing a few paragraphs at a time because that's all I could manage. And it has been it's been just magical to have it out in the world. I woke up the other morning and had an Instagram message from someone I have never met in my entire life telling me how much this book meant to her, and seeing people excited about it, it's just felt incredible. I think that's you don't make art for attention, but also kind of you do. I would say most artists, you want the things you make to mean something to people. And it's been really cool to see that this book has, and that people have seen things in it that I wanted them to see, and seen things in it that I didn't really realize were there. And I'm thrilled that it's, they found these meanings and these moments in it. And it's still, I am a nobody from Idaho, like not in a negative way. I just am. I've lived in rural North Idaho my entire life. I've done some interesting things, but not spectacular things. And then to see like, oh, I still can make this book, and it still can be out there, and people who don't know me are like excited about it. It's just really cool.
Well, I'm thrilled for you.
Thank
So,
you.
and on top of that, I think it's a lovely book. So, I really
Thank you.
appreciate you taking time today to talk with us.
Oh, I appreciate you inviting me. I it's always fun to talk to you.
Absolutely. We've been talking with author Tara Carr Roberts about her debut novel, Wild and Distant Seas. It is out now. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.